sweat the technique.
The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Spanish Flowers Restaurant on Durham.
Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, so here's the wormhole I fell down yesterday. Because Keith from L.A. sent the text that you should have paid Hector Neris, Josh Hader money. No, you should just pay Hector Neris money. And you go back to the offseason wish list. Don't want to pat yourself on the back. It told you so, that sort of thing. But, hey, two quality relievers, maybe a left-handed bat to can play left field, can play first base. They can complement Abreu. If Abreu struggles, can start in a pinch for a while, maybe forever. Or if one of the outfielders struggles, whether it's Chaz, whether it's Jake Myers, that he can give you some left field at bats, right? And we know that Jordan's not going to play left field every single day because that's an injury waiting to happen. So anyways, I started to think about how this front office has handled things in these last 2 years. First, the finances. We know all about Abreu's contract. We know about Montero's. We know about Hader's. If you combine those three contracts, that's $50 million a year. Those three guys are worth $50 million a year, which, think about a type of player that you could have $50 million a year if you didn't pay Hader, Abreu, Montero, which were all free agent signings that you've made in the last 2 years. This isn't like a long body of work that we're talking about here. This is about two off seasons. Astros just lost 3-1. Couldn't rally and score. So they get swept at Wrigley. Astros fall to 7-16. And it goes to the front office, right? I think.
7-19?
7-19. They're 12 games below 500, yeah. 7-19, 12 games below 500. First time since 2016. So $50 million between those three players that you've signed in the last two offseasons. And Montero's been pitching fine. I think he's going to get the loss today. No fault of his own. Espada used him in an up-down. I don't like that. Also, he got a bunch of bleeders, soft contact, like whatever. But that's $50 million you spent in the last two off seasons per year on three guys who are – look, I think Josh Hader's going to be fine, and Montero's pitched okay, and Brady's been absolutely awful. If you want to look at the three relievers that you're paying Hader 19, you're paying Presley 14, $15 million, and then you're paying Montero 11.5. Mm-hmm. So combined between those guys, you're looking at about $45 million, which $45 million a year is like Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander. Yep. $45 million, you can get any starting pitcher in the game that you want. Jordan Montgomery signed a $25 million one-year deal. Blake Snell was at 31. So, like, and with that money, you can sign whoever you want. And think about it, too. Like, think about what those relievers are giving you. And not even talking about production. I'm talking about workload. Like, how many times is a reliever going to pitch in a year? 60, 65 times at most. Like, the biggest, like, rubber arm guys that are, like, Iron Man types, those guys pitch, like, 75 times. A closer, a setup guy is probably pitching 60 games a year at best. So that means he's giving you, what, 60 innings a year. So you have three of those guys, Montero, Presley, Hader, you combine that together, that's 180 innings. That's 180 innings. A single starter can give you 180 yeah. innings. So you're paying $45 million to those three guys to give you 180 innings, where you could pay Jordan Montgomery $25 million a season to give you 180 innings. And it goes to show you this front office, too. And then also, I started to think about, like, the creativity. Like, look at things that your previous GMs have done in the past or even current GMs in the city. Like, Nick Caserio at all times is looking to add a player that's going to help this roster. Derek Barnett last year claimed him off of waivers from Philadelphia. Who was the defensive tackle from Tennessee? Tart.
Yep.
Like, and that guy played five plays a game. Like, it wasn't like this splash, but it made you better. Your 52nd, 53rd spots on the roster improved. Because every single week he's looking to improve the team from 1 to 53. What did the Astros do this offseason in terms of being creative to help this team? They didn't really be a factor in free agency until they freaked out with Kendall Graveman. You go back at Click. Click traded for Mauricio Dubon. Click was creative and traded the everyday center fielder Miles Straw for Phil Maton to help in the bullpen and then found a prospect throw-in in a Yiner Diaz. He rebuilt the bullpen at one trade deadline that led you
got
to a World
three
Series.
Three closers from three separate teams.
It was
teams.
Maton, Yimmy, and Graveman. But he actually got Montero in a throw-in who didn't help that year, but he helped the next year.
Yep.
So that's the kind of creativity you want from your general managers. You go back to Luno. Like, Luno's first ever transaction with the Astros was, I think, draft. It was Marwin Gonzalez. I think it was in the Rule 5 draft. It might have been waivers. I forget how they acquired Marwin Gonzalez, but he acquired Marwin Gonzalez. Remember, he traded for Aledmys Diaz, the mini moves to the bullpen. Like, general managers are creative. In what way have the Astros been creative in the last 2 years?
They haven't. They haven't. And at the same time, it's a fantasy baseball approach to where the owner was trying to prove that he could outsmart any general manager in baseball, and at the same time prove that that he played the game, he knows the game, and that anybody could be a general manager in this league, because he got rid of that general manager that you speak of in Click because of a personality conflict. He decided in the short term, I can do this, instead of waiting until you got the right guy for the next generation of general manager for the Astros for the foreseeable future. He jumped right out of the gates and signed Montero when everybody raised an eyebrow or two and went, what the hell did they just do? How much money did he give away for one good year of a guy that's been a journeyman? And then it continued with the Brantley deal, and it continued with the Abreu deal. And now you look at it. And we were talking about this the other day. The fact that no one in their right mind, when we were talking all off season about the holes that the Astros had to fill, was thinking that they needed the best closer or one of the best closers in baseball at the highest paid money for a relief pitcher in the game. We thought exactly what we were steadfast on. A bat, one or two arms out of the bullpen. But when you think about just bringing back your own, and I said if you wanted to be a little bit overzealous and you just brought back two of the three, maybe you just brought back Maton and Neris. But if you brought back Maton and Neris, I believe Neris got 9 and Maton got less than 5.
Yeah, Neris was 9, but like a lot of incentives to where he could make more. But
and,
9
and
million.
Maton was under 5. So you still had.
Yeah, he was 4.5. And no, it might have been 5, 6.5. But Stanek was 4.
Okay. So you could have gotten those guys just on one of the bad deals that you created, whether it be eliminating Hader and or eliminating Abreu and reducing Montero. Because I don't know who else was going to give him that kind of money. But if they were, we said this before the season even ended last year. Hey, look, if there's another team that's going to give him closer-type money or big-time money, then let him go, tip your cap, and thanks for the effort. But you should be able to find another guy to do what his role was with this team. Mm-hmm. But you just look at top to bottom, the one thing that no one thought that – well, look – what it did was it made all of baseball pause for a day or two and go, wow, look at the Astros. Wow, it's a massive name that's in bright lights on the neon sign, and it's a big chunk of money, and it's another big sexy move by Jim Crane. But it wasn't necessary.
And it's also easy. Like a bunch of the best general managers win with the moves that are under the radar. James Click won with the, you know, he wins with the Yiner Diaz move. Mm-hmm. He wins with rebuilding the bullpen. He wins with trading the Bregman's friend who's a catcher, yep, who's never going to be a big leaguer, for Mauricio Dubon. Like, those are the little things that general managers do that go a long way. And if we look in the last 2 years, in what ways have the Astros been in on those? It's very easy to go pay top dollar to the best free agent first baseman. It's very easy to give an inflated contract to one of your relievers, Montero, last year, that of course he's going to accept. It's very easy to finally crave to Josh Hader's demands and pay him what Josh Hader wants less than a week after we find out that Kendall Graveman is done for the year. Like, there is no creativity with this front office, and it very much acts like it's a former Major League Baseball player that's running the front office, whether it's Jackson, Biggio, Bagwell, Enes Cabell. I think Dana Brown was brought in to be a yes man. Like, why aren't you trading? You mentioned some of those holes. Like, you don't even have to go out in free agency to fill those holes. We're talking about a fifth inning guy, a sixth inning guy, a couple of arms that are actual big league arms, not these 4A guys like Dylan Coleman, actual 4A arms. We're talking about a utility infielder. We're talking about a fourth outfielder. We're not talking about these big splashes. We're talking about these little moves that makes your overall 26-man roster better. Like, David Hensley's on this team. David Hensley doesn't even play because he's so bad that he's just taking up, you know, one of the seats on the plane. J.P. France is a guy you have a surplus in the rotation. J.P. France could have fetched you a solid middle reliever. J.P. France could have fetched you a solid utility player. But you don't see that type of move with this organization in the last 2 years. And why? Because you fired the general manager who was actually worth his weight, and you brought in a yes man so you could continue to be this fantasy general manager. This front office has been horrendous in the last 2 years. And yes, we're saying it now because the Astros are struggling, but we're seeing the cracks. We're starting to see the cracks, and we're seeing how all of these things add up. Where is the creativity? Where is the shrewd move? Where is this throw-in player that's going to help your big league team? It doesn't exist. The Astros are just signing the big-name free agents, throwing them at a problem, hoping it works. And quite frankly, right now it hadn't.
No, and there was no need to do it either, right? It was a team that was coming off being one game away from another World Series appearance. It was a team that didn't have a mass exodus of guys and expiring contracts. It was definitely a situation where it didn't take a whole lot at all to make sure that it was at least as good, if not better, than it was a year ago, and to keep this golden era running. And sure, everybody was excited when you take a name like Josh Hader and what he's done in baseball. You weren't expecting it. You didn't think they needed it, but you were like, oh, wow, if that's the way he chooses to spend his money, that is a big, big, big splash for this team. Now the first thing you look at is, well, then they're just shortening the game. That's how they're going to solve the bullpen part of this. But it was a massive amount of money. And at the time, we had questions about spending that much money on a guy like that when you already had Ryan Pressly and Brian Abreu that were shutting down your eighth and ninth. But when you look at it, this is the problem that you have, because it becomes clearer and clearer by the day that you take a guy like James Click that was, at least to his credit, willing to stand his ground and say, this is the way I feel like the moves we need to make. If you're going to veto them, then you can go out and veto them like they did with the Urquidy deal with the Cubs and other things that went along with it.
Oh,
but
yeah,
for the most part,
I forgot about that,
he still was able to put his foot down enough to make some of the moves that have allowed this team to consistently move forward with potential because of the talent that he brought in. But this is exactly why, when you look at when the cards finally fell, this is exactly what he wanted. He wanted a puppet. He wanted a yes man. He wanted a guy that was just going to go out every day and be the front man that could bump his gums and talk about this baseball team. But when push came to shove and moves need to be made, he wanted to be the guy that made the moves. He wanted the credit because he thought anybody could do it. And with a team this good, that he would be able to soak up all of the props that would be given for a guy that could make moves. Mm-hmm. And instead, 2 years in a row, he made moves that have fell flat on their face.
And who do you trust? Who do you trust more with the roster? If you were a Major League Baseball owner, who do you trust more with the roster? James Click or Jeff Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, Craig Biggio, Enos Cabell?
It's a no-brainer.
But this is why. It is for us. Why isn't it for Crane?
Because he's an egomaniac, because most multi-millionaires and billionaires are. They need yes men. They crave the power in all aspects of their life. And they believe that they're smarter and better than just about anybody at any job that needs to be performed for them or with them. And that's what we're looking at right now. You're looking at another situation of another owner that's got way too much money, and this is just a toy that he wants to play with. And so it's his toy, and he can either take it and go home or do with it as he wishes. And no matter how much you like or dislike it, he's proven he's going to do it his way every single time.
This texter says that Dana Brown was the big-name general manager when he was hired. I like the hire of Dana Brown because of where he came from, his scouting background. And I do think that Dana Brown could be a good general manager. I just don't know how much power he's being given.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too.
I thought about this, too, real quick. Like, I thought about this last night, too. Remember when Dana Brown was hired? Dana Brown was hired, like, in January or February,
right,
after they played general manager.
Yep.
Do you remember who the finalists were for the general manager job? It was Brad Ausmus.
Oh, that's right.
It was Brad Ausmus.
Right. Yep.
Like, what does that tell you?
The bench coach for the Yankees.
That Brad Ausmus almost got this job because he's best friends with Jeff. What does that tell you? What does that tell you with this front office? They don't have real front office people running this organization. And everything adds up to that. The time that they hired, first off, it goes back to Click, that they moved on from Click. Then that they hired Dana Brown and that Brad Ausmus was a finalist after they played general manager for 3 months. Not empowering Dana Brown and still having Bagwell as kind of the face of the front office. Reggie Jackson doing podcasts saying how it's this big, you know, collection of people, what do you call them, the Crane Gang, that are making these decisions. The Astros do not have a real front office. They don't.
And it, you know what it is? It's buddies and ballers. That's what they want to make it up. They want to have it like they're foursome on the golf course, and while they're playing 18, they can solve all of a baseball team's problems, and they're all either ex Hall of Famers or they're buddies because you're the owner of the team with the guy that carries the big wallet. And it's not a sustainable way to run a baseball team short term or long term, and you're seeing that as Astros fans, because there's no reason why this window of opportunity in this golden era of Astros baseball couldn't have continued to get to double digits, to get to more than a decade, if it was run the right way. But what we're seeing now is what we talk about across sports when we start saying the Astros weren't in on those big-time, long-term, lots-of-money deals. It's because one or two moves, when they backfire on you, could be the demise of no matter how successful you've been. Now, unfortunately, we're being force-fed that on a daily basis, because you weren't that far off from being great again, But instead, because of the way that they went about the last two off seasons, you're now getting further and further away from being respectable.
See, you can survive the money moves because, like, you can just throw money at that. It's the stuff that you're passing on, though. It's not strengthening the bench. It's not strengthening the entirety of the pitching staff. It's not trading from a surplus and you're back into the rotation for that utility infielder. It's those little moves that whenever you're, you know, a rich former big leaguer on the golf course, you're not working hard to make those moves. Whereas a James Click would, a Jeff Luhnow would. This organization hasn't done that in the last 2 years. Nothing in the last 2 years has shown you that the Astros are this serious organization. Now, they'll throw money because they want to win. I think that they want to win. I don't have zero doubts that they want to win because they signed a Josh Hader to cover up for a Kendall Graveman. But it's just all of the steps along the way they're overlooking because of the Crane gang. Texture says that you guys were all on board with Hader whenever he was signed. Yeah, I fell for it, man. Like, you, somebody throws a sparkling object at you, you're going to fall for it. I fell for Jose Abreu. But if you, like, when is spending $19 million on a closer who's going to pitch 60 innings a year, when does that make financial sense? When are you going to get return on investment on that? Never.
Plus, the reason why we were in on it is, because remember the conversations leading up to that, was when are they going to do something? Do anything. They're sitting there twiddling their thumbs while guys are being signed. Other guys are getting away. Your own are walking out the door, and they haven't done a single damn thing in the entire offseason. And then all of a sudden, they made this big splash, and you were like, wow, okay. Well, one, that proves he's not cheap. And two, he's in complete go-for-it mode again. So we'll just see how it works. But they got three premier guys at the back of the bullpen. Let's see if they were done yet. Because we also didn't think if he was willing to spend that much money that he was just going to stop there, and there might be chance and hope for him to still fill those holes and the shortcomings that we talked about. Instead, that was it. And now, sitting where we're sitting, watching this team on a night-by-night basis, you're going, that was the worst way to possibly spend the money if that's all you were going to do. If you were in complete go-forward mode and that was just the first domino of other things you were going to do to strengthen this team, super. Yeah. But because you didn't, that's why the excitement didn't last a lot very long.
I'm not going to argue with the texter either. I was happy when they signed Hader. I was happy when they signed Jose Abreu because it's the shiny object. But is the best general manager or the best front office executive, is he signing the shiny object or is he making the wise move time after time after time? And let's forget that the margin for error and like winning at the professional level is razor thin. So you have to be making the best move almost every single time. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Gary?
Hey, guys, first-time caller. Man, I don't even know what to start. This is a disaster, man. This even takes me back to the 2020-2022 Houston Texans, the way the Astros are being handled right now. I mean, the way Jeff Bagwell has gotten himself into the organization, it's exactly the same way Jack Easterby was, you know, doing his own thing with the Texans. It's a disaster.
Appreciate the call,
Gary. Thanks, Gary.
I mean, I don't know if I want to put the Easterby label on him, but he has been a disaster. Yes.
It's the correlation or lack thereof of because you played the game that you know all aspects of the game. I mean, there are plenty of guys that played this game at a very high level that either, credit to them, they never wanted to be a general manager because they didn't have the skill set, or they just decided that wasn't for me, or for whatever reason, it didn't work out when they got the gig if they did get the chance. The fact is that there's too many guys that think because they were successful on the field, they know every aspect of the game, and they don't know and have the wherewithal to say, there's certain things that I just don't know. Like trying to balance a salary cap and understand numbers and taxes and all the things and how it affects not just the year in front of me, but the next 3 to 5 years as we go about trying to run the business of baseball. It happens, right? Charles Barkley forever and a day said that he was going to be a general manager someday. And the fact of the matter was, he better have six analytics guys and a couple of other guys because he thought just because he was a hell of a player and he knew talent, that's all there was to it. And there was so much more. That's a perfect example here. Just because Reggie's a Hall of Famer and Bagwell's a Hall of Famer and Biggio's a Hall of Famer doesn't mean that they know how to balance the books, make shrewd decisions from a financial standpoint, and still understand the ramifications of why you don't do certain deals when you thought that because you had competent general managers that they could at least explain to you, hey, we're not – the return on investment from a Crane perspective as a businessman just doesn't work for us if we make moves this way.
The We talk about this a lot, like in coaching, where look at all the former players who have went into coaching and they do not have success, like Clyde Drexler, hate to say it, go Cougs, Patrick Ewing at Georgetown, Chris Mullin at St. John's. Some people would throw Penny Hardaway into the mix at Memphis.
Derek Fisher
in the
Jason
NBA.
Jason Kidd didn't have a whole lot of success. He's in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's easier in the NBA than like college. That's really beside the point. But you're right. Like, these superstars have trouble becoming coaches because, one, I don't think they can really relate to like the average player. Secondly, like, what is the fire in their belly? Like, how much fire in their belly is when you have $50 million in the checking account, et cetera, et cetera. Same thing with the front office. Like, I do not want a former Hall of Fame first baseman running the team in 2024. Someone said, bring back the nerds. Yeah.
For sure.
I still think they have nerds. I just don't think that they value their opinion nearly as much. And they flat out said it. Like, listen how many times Jeff Bagwell is anti-analytics, and he's like, well, we went too far into analytics. Remember whenever he was at the, I don't even remember the press conference. It might have been Dana Brown's, where he was holding court in the back room with all the TV guys. Yep. Oh, we went too far into analytics. He is devaluing the analytics right there, where you were built off of analytics. You were at the forefront of analytics, and that's how the golden era was born.
The other thing, too, Jeremy, you think about it, it's the whole credit to Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning had all the money in the world and realized, I don't want to put in the manpower hours on a daily basis to do what's necessary to be a competent head coach or general manager or somewhere in football other than broadcasting, which is why Romo's doing what he's doing, because he shows up less than 24 hours before a game and he gets oodles of money to work one day a week. And now he's being criticized for even that because he's not putting enough effort in, as opposed to when you hear about the NFL coaches that say, hey, doing what we do, we sleep in our office during the season a ton. We're barely home. We're at the office 24/7. We're constantly looking from a week-to-week perspective, an advantage that we can get, things we got to do. Multi-millionaires don't need that, don't want that, don't want to sign up for that. And that's a lot of the reason why they put their time in when they were playing. They don't want to do that, but they want all the accolades and the attention. They want people to know that, hey, you know your stuff. You know the game. But if you're not willing to put in the effort, and also the other key is you have to be allowed the ability to do your job. I really believe if Dana Brown was not handcuffed on every move, I still believe Dana – I believe, and we talked about this a while back when I said, I think James Click and Dana Brown, this will not be their only stop in baseball, and we will look back on those two guys in their next stops and say, those two guys were damn good general managers. They just weren't allowed to do what they were supposed to do.
I mean, Click's won a World Series. I agree with you about Dana Brown. I think that Dana Brown is a good, sound baseball decision maker that has not been given full authority when he 100% should be. And there's proof to this. There's proof to this. Listen to Reggie Jackson on that podcast. Listen to Jeff Bagwell. Jeff Bagwell had quotes yesterday at the golf course with Winkler at ABC 13, where he's talking like he's the general manager, like he is the leader of this organization. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener. Like, he says that you're 100% right on all this fire emoji. Not trying to be. Just call it like it is. Caller Rob on the southwest side. You're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Rob?
Hey, guys, appreciate you taking my call. I think the biggest issue we're going on right now with the Astros is everybody can see the mistakes that they've made. It's the inability to swallow their pride and get rid of the mistakes that were made. Jose Abreu is going to get paid, whether he's on the team or not. It's very similar. I'm an Aggie grad. It's very similar to Jimbo Fisher. You paid him. He signed the contract. He's going to get paid no matter what. You can pay him to go away, or you can pay him to hurt the team. It's about time to start cutting the people that need to be cut. Abreu needs to be gone. Singleton's garbage. We've got a kid in AAA who can make Jake Myers look silly. Putting Jake Myers on the roster was a mistake coming out of spring training. And then you move from there. There are people out there in free agency that can do better. Are they all-stars? No. But can they do better? Yes. I don't understand moving Bregman where they are. We're still playing back of the baseball card with him, too. I don't let him figure himself out in the eight hole. But the pride is getting in the way of the Astros right now, and you're right, it starts at the top.
I think it's pride and it's ego. Appreciate the call, Gary. Look, I think that's spot on. I think that, again, the other thing that you would like to see is if the owner is that much committed to winning and he realizes and he hates the fact that the fingers are constantly being pointed at him and his foursome of golf buddies and the Crane Gang, then you know how you can rectify this still? You can still spend some money. You can go out and spend some money and make the commitment financially. do less, spend more, and get the hell out of the way and let a guy do what he could see still capable of doing to fix some of these holes. You know you're getting pitchers back. If you need another bat, go out and sign Brandon Belt. Sign a guy that maybe at the start of the year you weren't interested in entertaining that much money for a guy on a short-term deal with when you had what you had. But if you get rid of Abreu and Singleton, and you bring in a guy like Brandon Belt, and then you call up one of the guys from Sugarland that you feel like at least could back him up, you're instantaneously a better baseball team, and at least that's the kind of commitment people can get behind, as opposed to, I'm committed to showing you I have the biggest ego and the most money in the room, and I could do this job better than anybody that's out there for general manager, and then you're tripping all over yourself every single day.
713-780-ESPN. I agree with almost everything Rob said, like the putting the pride aside, I agree. Crane should be like, hey, let's let the baseball people make the baseball. I shouldn't say that because Bagwell and Jackson are baseball people. Let's let the general managing people be the general manager. I disagree slightly with Jake Myers. I do think that Jake Myers is a professional Major League Baseball player. Is he an everyday center fielder? Probably not. He's probably a platoon option. I think he's more than capable of starting against left-handed pitching, and his defense is going to play. I think he's more of a fourth outfielder that starts against lefties, not an everyday outfielder. I think we're seeing that. And then he mentioned like the free agents. You don't have to build through free agency. Trade a J.P. France for a utility infielder. Make your bench better. We're talking about a surplus before three other starters come back. Like, we're talking about J.P. France and Hunter Brown being bumped from the starting rotation, while Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia, and Lance McCullers are still on the injured list and coming back at some point, hopefully. So why don't you have the foresight in the offseason? Okay, J.P. France, he probably pitched way better than he really is. We know that deep down. This is a general manager that's having to make these tough decisions but also make a good baseball decision, and you trade that guy for another Mauricio Dubon type because that could happen. Or you trade the guy for a real sixth-inning middle reliever because that can happen. These are the small moves that the Astros are not making because they're being run by Hall of Fame baseball players, and they're not letting the general manager do the general manager stuff. And the Bregman stuff, I agree with batting Bregman second right now because they have to get Alex Bregman going. If the Astros are going to be good, Alex Bregman has to be good, and the best chance to make Alex Bregman good is to give him Yordan Alvarez protection. I will agree that if it was Game 7 of the World Series, Rob, he'd be batting 8th. But because it's still Game 20-something, I would have him at 2nd. But for the most part, I agree with what you said.
Well, the other thing, too, Jeremy, is we kid about it now because it's become such a catchphrase. But the fact is, what, 4/5 of the Crane gang are supposed to be trusted because of the back of their baseball card as players, and none of them have any kind of general manager experience or reason for you to believe that in their current roles as part of an influential group that runs this baseball team that they know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, it's alarming. 713-780-ESPN. A lot of people want to weigh in on this, so we'll continue this conversation. The Astros, why are you mad at the Astros? There's a lot of different reasons. They lose again today. They get swept at Wrigley before they head out of country to Mexico City. Poor start for the Astros. One of the poorest starts they've had, and it's a poor start in the Golden Era. It's one of the worst starts they've ever had. It's the first time that there have been 12 games under 500 since 2016. The front office is in shambles. Joe Espada's being called Steven Silas. The players aren't performing. What is your frustration with the Houston Astros? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, we know the weekend's right around the corner. Right now, it looks like it's going to be ominous. It might rain. Guess what? You still want to play golf, even though you had a tee time that's probably going to be washed out? X-Golf Katy is the only place I can recommend for you because it's the best golf simulators I've ever seen in the Houston area, and they are so accurate that even the putting is fantastic, and the chipping. You can play your own golf ball. And the fact is, it costs less than what it would cost to get your tee times at most of the courses around the city. And rain or shine, sunshine or nighttime, you can go to X Golf. You can play 18 holes on 50 courses across the world, or you can use it like a driving range. And because of Shot Tracker, it'll track everything: the distance, the spin, the direction, everything on every shot, so that you're constantly getting better, working on your game no matter the weather or the time of day. It's absolutely fantastic. Go to X-Golf Katy online right now and check out how you can book a simulator and get there just like booking a tee time. The only difference is you're not going to get rained out. The weather's not going to play a factor. And it's also the best combination of a sports bar along with a golf range, because you can go there, play 18 holes of golf in an hour and 15 minutes, and then sit there and watch all the TVs, enjoy the great food and drink, and understand it is a combo platter from golf heaven. It is the best simulators and the best food and drink like a sports bar meets a golf course. It's absolutely fantastic. Tell them I sent you by. Chris is doing a hell of a job, and the business is absolutely flourishing because of it. Go check him out, X-Golf Katie, today.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Spanish Flowers Restaurant on Durham.
Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
This is a transitional time for the team. I think we can be a little more patient as fans to see how the roster develops. Success is hard to sustain, we'll be fine. Astros were a World Series contender, one of the favorites to win the World Series, one of the favorites to win the American League, and one of my biggest pet peeves, like the caller yesterday, well, they're tired. These players are tired. They're tired. They're tired. Like, they're tired. They're professional big league players, and they're tired? This is another one of my pet peeves. In baseball, success is hard to sustain. And I hate to do this in the city of Houston. Do you know the last time the Yankees had a losing record? Just take a guess. Just guess.
2000
nope.
And...
Nope. Further back than that. When was the last time? Nope. Further back than that. 1992. Whew. The last time the Yankees had a losing record was 1992. Yes, we make fun of them. They haven't won a World Series since 2009. They haven't won a clean World Series since 2000. We make fun of them all the time, and rightfully so. It's good fun, all this rivalry. The whole idea, well, you can't sustain winning. In Major League Baseball, you can. Major League Baseball, you can sustain winning. You know how you sustain winning? Now, the Yankees used to throw a bunch of money,
right?
And they would have these big payrolls year in, year out. Now, they haven't done that in, like, the last 10 years. They've actually been called a little bit cheap. Cashman's been called cheap a little bit. Now, those signs are big free agents really need to be. Garrett Cole. But they
trading for Stanton and massive
Who can do that, though?
Right.
I mean, why couldn't you? Like, their payroll, like, anybody can do that. You have to be willing to spend a little bit of money. Like I'm not the one saying that as long as I'm here, the window's always open. Jim Crane said as long as I'm here, the window's always open. So we're going to take him for what he said and then try to get his actions to back up his words. You can be a sustained winner in baseball for a long period of time. Do you have to spend a little bit of money from time to time? Yes, you do, but the Astros are spending money. The Astros' problem right now is not that they're cheap. The Astros' problem right now is they're spending money in the wrong areas, that their payroll distribution is poor, not that their payroll is poor. So the whole idea, well, the Astros can't be good forever. Yeah, they can. They can be good for a long period of time. You know who else is good for a long period of time? Now, they have had some losing seasons in this century. Tampa Bay Rays, who have done it with a $45 million payroll all the time. How do you consistently win at this level for a long period of time? You have a good front office. You have a front office that has a long-term plan that isn't making short-term decisions. Now, maybe some of those moves are taking away from your apex, but they're widening the gap, this window, of how long you can be good. If the Yankees can win for every year since 1993, the Astros can be a sustained winner. If the Tampa Bay Rays, without a few years mixed in here or there where they were below 500, if they can be a perennial team that is a contender with a quarter of the payroll you have, you can absolutely be a sustained winner in baseball, but you have to have good people running the team. You have to have, I'll say, some commitment to salary, and you have to be committed to the long-term plan and never waver off the long-term plan for the short-term goals of Jeff Bagwell.
And the emotions that run into it, too, yeah. Because you have to make the shrewd moves, the savvy moves, and you have to take all emotion out of it and realize at a certain time it's time to move on, no matter what that certain player has meant to a team, a community, its history, and everything that goes with it. That's what you have to be focused on. And if you're able to do those things, that's why Tampa Bay's been successful. On the flip side, if you're the Dodgers and the Yankees, you just had a checkbook that was open all the time, and you could afford and sustain no matter what spending you were going to do, because even the worst mistakes can be, and it goes back a segment or two, that not that Crane's willing to do this, but the fact is the way the Dodgers have kind of, and the Yankees have been able to recover from some of the risky big-name and big-money deals they've made is they just continue to spend. They find another guy that's going to be able to fill in or take the job of a Jacoby Ellsbury or cover up when Stanton's hurt every year or do the kind of things that big market, big money, big revenue teams can do. If you're not that and you're not the Rays, then you have to, you still have the best of both worlds. You have to have great talent evaluation. You have to make savvy and not overly risky, but willing to take the right risk at the right time, and you're willing to pull the plug and cut bait whenever you need to.
In Fuentes, you have to have a farm system. We are completely depleted. That's true. You do have to rebuild the farm. And the Astros, they do have some factors outside of management that contributed to their lack of farm system. They had a couple of first-rounders and second-rounders stripped in back-to-back years for doing something that the rest of Major League Baseball was doing. But that, like, the Yankees seem to always have a pretty good farm system. You know who always has a great farm system despite picking at the back of the first round every single
Dodgers.
Year? The Dodgers. The Dodgers are always, like, top five in pipeline.
Look at the young pitchers in the last 4 or 5 years. Urias, Carrot Top, yeah. The two guys
always
last year, they just plug and played when half their rotation was out. They always have a loaded farm system.
And a lot of times they'll use those minor leaguers to trade for, like, stars. But that comes from having this unbelievable system. And again, you can do that. The Astros did do that if you have a commitment to doing that. So I don't believe in the whole where the window has to close, that you know, things work in cycles in sports. Most sports they do. Basketball, football, they do for the most part.
And you think
baseball,
about Yordan,
not the case.
Think about Yordan's contract, too, and how team-friendly that deal is.
Yeah.
That gives you the opportunity to use the rest of that money elsewhere and sustain winning, because the best hitter, obviously this year it's arguable with Altuve, yeah. One of your two best hitters that's also your best power guy and RBI guy is going to be here for the long haul at a very affordable contract.
And Altuve gave you a hometown discount too.
Yes,
so
did.
You can make the case that both of your best two offensive players are on friendly team contracts. 4690 with all the GM and owner talk. When will the 1 through 9 guys take any criticism? What faith should we have in them? Even if Hader were to be everything he should be, what will it matter if this lineup can't hit? I don't know if you listen to our show. Like, we bang on these guys every single day. Like, we bang on these guys when they're good. What do you think we're doing whenever they're bad? When they're 12 games below 500, of course we're banging on them.
Go back to the Espada conversation. Go listen to some of that on the podcast and realize that the first thing that I said why Joe Espada shouldn't be in the crosshairs and that this is not on him is because of two things.
Yeah.
Because of the inability of the players on the field to do their jobs and execute the way they're supposed to be and they're paid well to do so, and the fact that the injuries are stacking up against them at a level that most teams don't sustain in a year the way they've already sustained to start this year. But that's why Joe Espada isn't in the hot seat, because the guys I said yesterday on a rant have to look in the mirror and start evaluating themselves and their shortcomings, and regardless of how much they're paid, do the job that you're supposed to be doing, and this will be a totally different conversation.
713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Spanish Flowers, the new one on Durham. This is your spot for Cinco de Mayo. Specials on Casadores, Patron, Don Julio. They'll be having giveaways here during Cinco de Mayo weekend as well. North Freeway, North Main, newest one right here on Durham and Shepherd. This is your spot to be Cinco de Mayo. It's your spot to be if you have a graduation coming up, graduation party hosted here, any sort of reservations, company banquet, whatever. This is your spot for your reservations, your parties right here at Spanish Flowers, any of the three. Also, if you're looking for a place to watch some ball, I mean, this is a great spot. Margaritas, fajitas, they have TVs everywhere. Not a bad seat in the house and excellent food to boot. 713-780-ESPN. Let's take a look at the draft. The Astros have put me in a sour mood, and I can't stand that because today's one of my favorite days on the sports calendar. I love the first round of the NFL draft. NFL draft starts tonight, and we kick off our commentary about the NFL draft with Bad Take Boulevard NFL Draft Edition. It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from Spanish Flowers on Durham on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. He does a ton of positive stuff around this community. He does a lot of plastic surgery, a lot of spot treatments, a lot of Botox, a lot of things where people capitalize on a daily basis. The one thing I know from personal experience, he does the NeoGraft procedure. And for guys that are losing their hair, they're thinning, they're balding, they don't think they can get their hair back, and they don't want to try all the gimmicks that just mask the problem. The NeoGraft is the solution you need, because the NeoGraft is your hair taken from a place where you're never going to lose it. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go elsewhere. And that's what Doc Linville told me. And he said, hey, look, your hairline, it's constantly creeping up. He goes, your forehead, it's become an 8-head. You can get it a 4-head again if you just do the NeoGraft. I did all the research. I talked to him. I got his staff involved. I asked questions. They gave me answers. I did the NeoGraft. I could not be happier with the results. I got my hair back. He was absolutely right. It got stronger and longer because it's from that place on the sides and the back of your head where it's never going anywhere. And in 6 to 9 months, I saw such a difference, and everybody else did too. that it was remarkable the confidence that you get and how much you like the way you look again. Check them out today because you, as a listener to ESPN 97.5, get a free consultation with Doc and his staff. It normally costs $150 for anybody off the street. Because you listen to us and you go to 975hair.com to make that first appointment, you get it for free. Ask questions. Get answers. No signing on the dotted line, no commitment, no money out of pocket, just you figuring out if it might be something that you'd consider and do. If you do it, I'm telling you from personal experience, you won't regret it. It's absolutely fantastic. Check them out today and tell them I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com.
Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
Killer Bees live from Spanish Flowers on Duro, the newest Spanish Flowers. Great spot to watch a game, have a drink, have some fajitas. Great spot to host your banquet, your graduation party. Also a great spot to spend Cinco de Mayo. Drink specials, giveaways all throughout Cinco de Mayo as well. Spanish Flowers, best Mexican food in the city. All right, Bad Take Boulevard Draft Edition. We're going to try to, what's the old saying? Out of sight, out of mind with the Astros for a little bit.
Sure.
We might get back to it if our listeners want. And it's on right in front of us. But we're going to try to out of sight, out of mind the Astros for a moment. I'm sure we'll have some hot takes either later or tomorrow. But let's get to Bad Take Boulevard NFL Draft Edition, which is too bad. I mean, it's not bad. It's good. We had some doozies that we're going to have to store up for next week, including some ESPN 97.5 personalities. But first and foremost, if we're having an NFL Draft Bad Take Boulevard Edition, where are we starting? We're starting with Mel Kiper. Mel Kiper's had a bunch of doozies in his career. In fact, Mel Kiper's had some guarantees where Mel Kiper said Mel Kiper would stop working. And he didn't do that. But here was his latest and greatest, a couple of quarterbacks that Mel Kiper has liked.
I'm going to go back to Ritter and say, in this draft class, you know, it's tough not to go with him and not take a leap of faith on Desmond Ritter. He has the attitude, the character, the approach, all that, the want to. He's got all the talent in the world. History tells us talent wins out at that position, at least recently more than ever, okay? I think also when I was watching this, guys, and I'll finish on this with the quarterbacks, all I could think of, this is making Mitch Trubisky some money. This is making Mitch Trubisky, putting in a little bit of more demand than you would have ever thought Mitchell Trubisky could be in based on what happened with the Chicago Bears at the end of his reign there, okay, his tenure there. Then he goes to Buffalo behind Josh Allen. He kind of just makes everybody see enough to say, hey, yeah, you know, could he be a better option? Or we put him in, pair him with one of these guys, and let them develop.
There you go. Mel Kiper loves himself some Desmond Ritter and Mitch Trubisky. Although Trubisky was a former Pro Bowler.
So was a guy Trubisky. Played a quarter of the season.
Tyler Huntley?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop using Pro Bowlers as arguments that guys are good. I saw Desmond Ritter play in college. He was at Cincinnati. We were in the American at the time, Power 6. Now in the Big 12, Power 4. I didn't love Ritter coming out of college. I thought Ritter was a pretty good game manager in college. I thought the rest of that roster was really good. Of course, Cincinnati went to a New Year's Six bowl game. I thought his team was really good. I never thought Ritter was great. This is not one where I've agreed with Mel Kiper, and I've agreed with Mel Kiper in the past, but this is not one, and he missed on Desmond Ritter. I think Ritter's a fine backup, but he's not a starter in the NFL.
People in Atlanta thought Desmond Ritter was great for one game after the Texans this last season when he threw for 315 yards against the Texans. But other than that, I think he's now in the UFL.
Is he? He's not on a team?
I think he's on a UFL team.
Desmond Ritter's not in the NFL?
I believe that's true.
I cannot believe that Desmond Ritter's not in the NFL. No, he's with Arizona.
Okay, I thought I saw him playing in a UFL game.
It says he's on Arizona's roster.
Okay.
2024 through present. Yeah, he's got to be in the NFL.
Well, it was in that same draft then. There's one of those guys that was taken highly that's playing in the UFL right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Mel Kiper's had several. But I also believe that I don't ever think that I'd put my job on the line to say that a guy is going to turn out to be Jimmy Clausen.
Right, that was the big one.
Yeah, that was the massive one. If by 2017 Jimmy Clausen isn't the starting quarterback for the Panthers, that I'll quit my job, and then everybody called him on it and he didn't quit his job. Mad Dog Russo's done that too. But I think that, you know, just watch how much scrutiny Lance takes no matter what he puts out. It's a no-win proposition because everybody's waiting for you to fail. And when you succeed, you're supposed to succeed because everybody knows how talented a guy is. But, yeah, that's a tough – when you start taking it to that level with your comments, that's where you can get hurt.
Yeah, what was your biggest draft miss? Do you have one?
I'm trying to think all time.
I have a bad draft miss last year. It was C.J. Stroud. I missed on C.J. Stroud.
I definitely missed had, on C.J. Stroud. I had concerns about C.J. There's no doubt about it.
I hit on Will Levis, though. I was right on Will Levis. Will Levis was way better than people thought he would be, and I was the one saying he was going to be good. Just saying. All right. Moving along. I'm kind of kidding. Kind of. Colin Cowherd, he lands on Bad Take Boulevard quite often, quite a bit. Here's a guy that he wouldn't have touched back in the day.
There's a lot of concern about Alabama's running back Derrick Henry in the NFL. I wouldn't touch him. I would never touch these running backs for Alabama.
I would never touch these running backs from Alabama. Derrick Henry turned out pretty good.
Derrick Henry's better than pretty good. Yeah, pretty dominant.
Pretty good, that Derrick Henry. I wouldn't touch him. Here's one thing that I do like about Cowherd. Colin Cowherd believes what he says. Colin Cowherd will believe what he says. And look, Look, you're gonna miss on takes. You're gonna have some things that you say that you rewind, in a year that aren't gonna be accurate. But whenever you say something, you should have some conviction. You shouldn't toe the line. You shouldn't ride the fence. I credit Colin Cowherd for saying things with his chest. I don't like Derrick Henry. I wouldn't touch him. Sounds stupid now, but I admire that in the moment. I admire having a take with some bravado.
I think you can say that about Skip Bayless and Colin Cowherd.
I think Bayless is way worse, though.
He does it intentionally, but he's like a used car salesman. Is that he will sell it every down to the last second. He will not apologize for it. He will not backtrack from it.
Why should he, though?
Well, because you're making $18, $19 million. Yeah, but there's an art form to it, matter what happens, you just don't care because you are, honestly, you're looking for the vitriol. You're looking for the anger.
Now, I'm cool. I'm cool with you saying what you believe and saying it with your chest, and then in a year, if you turn out to be wrong, then like, hey, I was wrong. Whatever. Like, no one cares about that. Everybody's going to be wrong. So that's where I don't like Skip. Like, Skip will argue things even when he's wrong, you know? And, like, he's been proven wrong, and you have the receipts that he is wrong. He's like, oh, I wasn't wrong. Like, that's the one thing that annoys me.
But neither guy will, right? Will Cowherd admit when he's wrong?
I don't listen to Cowherd enough anymore.
I don't either.
I don't. The only time that I listened to Cowherd a lot whenever he was back on ESPN after Mike and Mike. I haven't caught a whole lot of Cowherd. I've never watched or listened to Cowherd after he left ESPN. The only time that I've heard Cowherd is whenever we hear cuts like this.
Sean Payton stuff.
Remember that's more of a bite, or you listen to an interview.
Yeah, and he was so hypercritical of ownership and everything in Houston. I wonder what he's saying now. He'd never backtrack it. He'd never walk it back.
No, I think he has. I think Cowherd has. Cowherd's he's talked about the Texans organization and how good they are.
I never heard
that. No, he has. And Cowherd actually, like a couple weeks ago, was giving credit for Caserio. I can't remember who they brought in. But they brought somebody into studio, and they called Cowherd and Cowherd's like producers and people, and they were asking Cowherd and his producers what they felt about the player and like how he acted, how he was behind the scenes, and they were doing their due diligence on the character of the player.
Good on
and
him. Cowherd, if he did.
Yeah, Cowherd.
I haven't
did
heard
do that.
That, and I know how critical he was.
I think SportsMap posted
with
it.
The Sean Payton stuff about the fact that because Sean was his buddy, giving him inside scoop on when he was being pursued, that he just decided to go guns blazing all out.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find that, and I'll send it to you because it was pretty interesting. Yeah, Cowherd gave him the flowers.
Good on him if he did.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's exactly. Like, concede your L's, et cetera, et cetera. All right, next one on NFL Draft Bad Take Boulevard special. Todd McShay, Merrill Hodge, they liked a certain quarterback over the great Aaron Rodgers, Blinker's favorite player.
I do like Braun better than Aaron Rodgers. You know, Aaron Rodgers is right now in his career. Let's look at the positives with Braun. You know, as Reese just mentioned, he's played in two pro-style systems. That's a plus when you come to the NFL. I thought he was more mobile as far as moving in the pocket and getting out of the pocket. I feel a lot of times he was running for his life, too.
It's good timing. Gets rid of the ball on time. And when he gets into a rhythm, he can beat you in a lot of different ways. I honestly think Brian Brohm, 2 years from now, could be the starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. Brian Brohm's upside is greater than that of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, everybody thinks that Merrill Hodge is like the quarterback guru
Brian
now
Brown
because
played
he was big on they played a little.
What year was this that he was talking about? Was Rodgers already there at Green Bay?
No, I think they were the same draft class.
Okay.
No, this ridiculous. I believe this was actually a couple years after.
Yeah, I thought Rodgers had played a couple years, and he was saying that.
So maybe
he
hadn't started.
Yet,
I believe this is
maybe
while Aaron Rodgers was still the backup and hadn't started yet.
Yeah, it's funny though because Hodge is like considered this NFL quarterback guru because he hit on Stroud last year and he was like right on Bryce Young. But then you go back enough time and he's like dogging on Aaron Rodgers, who turned out to be pretty good quarterback.
I didn't really believe in Aaron Rodgers either.
I mean, it's hard to when you backed up for 2 years.
Yeah, I got a story on that.
Go for it.
So my buddy that I used to work with ended up working for Miller. And Miller
was
back
it Daryl Morey?
No. And Miller had Miller had a relationship with Packer players. And one year he said, I'm cleaning out my closet at the end of the season at the office. I got this helmet I'm going to send you because I'm going to throw it out otherwise. Just take it. Okay. I go, well, what is it? He goes, well, it's signed by the third string quarterback. You can do whatever you want with it. And it was Aaron Rodgers. And I was like, what the hell do I want with this? I was like, you know what I can do? I can take rubbing alcohol and I can rub the signature off of it.
Oh.
And then I can have it in case there's a Packer player that comes through or whatever like that. You know, and there you can get him to sign it. Oh, yeah, cool. He called me like 2 years later. He goes, you didn't wipe that signature. I go, yeah, I did. I was like, the minute you sent it to me, I got rid of it.
You did?
No.
Oh,
I didn't.
Oh, you just.
I luckily saved it and didn't go too far overboard till I saw him play. But, yeah, he was convinced that I had rubbed the signature off of it and that it was gone for good. But, yeah, I didn't really believe in him because he sat so long behind Favre, too.
The text line saying it was Kyle Hamilton. Kyle Hamilton was on again. I guess this was during Kyle Hamilton's draft. I guess he didn't love what they said because they passed on Kyle Hamilton and traded down and took Kenyon Green. It's a funny story, though. I'm glad you didn't rub the autograph
Kyle,
off.
Kyle Hamilton, the safety from Notre Dame?
Yeah, so it was a couple years ago.
Okay.
So it kind of doesn't add to the timeline, though.
No.
Like, that would have been before he was banging on the Texans.
Right.
Yeah, so maybe you might be onto something. Donald Trump, May 8, 2014. Do you have a good Trump impersonation?
No, Lance does.
Lance says, I mean, you have some pretty good ones. I thought you might have a Trump. Teams are making a big mistake not taking Johnny Manziel. He's going to be really good. Future POTUS.
Oof.
And now former POTUS and then maybe future POTUS. We'll see.
Jerry Jones was all over that too, wasn't he? But then he didn't pull the trigger at the end.
I think he got spooked off of him for some reason.
I think Stephen talked him out of it.
Yes, that's the story. Stephen, yeah. Jerry was gung-ho and was going to draft Johnny Manziel, but Stephen Adams, his son, talked him out of it.
Not Stephen Adams. Stephen
Adams.
The backup for the Rockets.
Stephen Jones.
Yes.
Stephen Jones.
Stephen Jones.
Yes. Jerry Jones' son, Stephen Adams.
He's a big boy.
That's what spooked him. I mean, his son spooked him. Brendan Bowers. I've never heard of this guy. Don't know. This was in 2012. Don't know where you guys will be in 20 years, but I'll be in Canton for Trent Richardson's Hall of Fame speech. You know what? I'm stealing this tweet, and I'm going to tweet this about the first player the Houston Texans take in this draft. I'm going to do it.
Trent Richardson, the running back from Alabama.
And they made the big trade, remember?
That's right.
Cleveland traded up, big draft day trade, traded for him, like traded up, got him. And then like one or two years ago, they traded him to Indy in another big trade.
Yep. Yes, they traded him away to Indy for a first-round pick.
But was there a trade-up on draft day for the Browns to get Richardson?
That I don't remember.
I think that there was.
I think Cleveland traded up to get him, too.
I'm not super confident on that, but I think that is the case. But I'm going to tweet that no matter what. People are going to think I'm crazy. I can't wait to do this.
That means Colin was right about Alabama running backs?
He's about one of them.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I mean. One of them. Yeah. Maybe, I mean.
Mark, how many?
Mark Ingram was pretty good.
Mark Ingram.
Mark Ingram was good, not great.
What's his name? It's in Pittsburgh right now.
But he's more
Najee Harris.
Najee Harris.
I don't think
Eddie Lacy had a couple good years for the Packers.
Eddie Lacy ate himself out of the league, but early on he was really good for
Roll Tide
for a couple years.
Ain't give a bad word about anything but the Tide. And Chris Ball, I love Chris Baldwin. Chris Baldwin, I think, is one of the best writers in the city of Houston, but he's never going to live this down. April 29, 2011, Texans will rue the night. They take pizza boy J.J. Watt over Nick Fairley, Houston lover. I don't know what the Houston lover part means. What does the Houston lover part mean?
Farley's a Houston lover?
I don't know what that means.
Did Farley have some kind of ties to the city that made sense to draft him even more?
Maybe Houston loved Nick Fairley?
I told you this before. On the highway to hell, I got into it back and forth and got doubted and called out on the fact that I said J.J. Watt was going to be a guy that everybody's going to love here because of his ticker and his relentless motor and his abilities. And I watched him play every down and they're like, you're out of your mind. He's a situational pass rusher and he's not going to be more than that. It's like,
I nailed my draft take last year whenever I said the rest of the NFL was going to live in infamy about the Houston Texans trading up to number 3. There's a couple more here that are too good. I know we're up against it, but Mark Ryan, who used to do radio in Houston, now he's in Detroit. He's in Detroit now. I don't like what Tampa did trading up to take Aguayo. Remember they traded up into the third round to take a kicker? Second or third round. I think you're right. I don't like what Tampa did trading up to take Aguayo. I love it. He'll make a greater impact in the win-loss column than half the first-rounders. How long before he was cut?
Less than a year?
Maybe. I think it was maybe a year or two. Maybe they held on to him for a year or two. That's
Didn't
an all-time
he get
right
hurt
here.
Celebrating?
No, that was Grammatica.
But not only Grammatica, but I thought he did, too. I thought, like, he
You might be right.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a hamstring.
It wasn't like career ending or anything, but I think he got hurt celebrating a kick.
Yeah, never draft a kicker in the second round, man. Ever. Like, there's not enough of a gap between the best kicker and the mediocre kicker that you should be drafting a
Packers
kicker in the
drafted
second
that
round.
Kid last year from Auburn.
What round?
I forget. It wasn't that high, but they used a draft pick on him, and he was the reason why they lost a couple games last year. And now they Carlson. They brought in his brother kicks for the Raiders.
They brought in
competition, and he's probably not going to make the team.
What is the earliest round you would take a kicker?
Seventh. Six or seven.
Yeah, I'm probably with you. Yeah. I think anything top five rounds.
Because normally your sixth and seventh round picks are going to be special teamers that
and
maybe
you can
turn,
cut those guys. And it's not a big deal,
right? So I would say if you're going special teamers that might turn into something, why not kick a kicker and a punter at that point?
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, what are your favorite draft bets tonight? I have a few prop bets that I like tonight. And also, there's some Texans odds on the first position that they'll be taking with their first pick. What would you be taking? What are some of your favorite draft bets? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.